last question. Do you think that your children felt pressure to perform at a higher level than might have been expected of an ordinary student because their father was a faculty member?
Perhaps so, but I think it was just their own personal nature that they wanted to do their best. I don't think they thought too much about the fact. You know, if you grew up a faculty person's child, you were so used to it, you didn't think, well, now because I am, I've got to do this or got to do that.
Yeah, I guess what I was trying to say was not that it was a conscious thing, but that they felt that they had to perform to a very high standard.
Well, I think they did feel that. They wanted to.
They wanted to. They didn't feel that they were being asked to do more than they could do.
No.
So, did you help them with their studies? Or did you set limits for them? Did their father have expectations?
No, I think we just let them move at their own speed. We helped them if they came and asked questions. And they're still asking questions. My son called me on the phone the other night and said, when was Arthur King of Britain? And I said, hey, wait a minute, he never was King of Britain. Well, he said, I couldn't find him in the royal pedigrees, you know, and I wondered. But they got answers to their questions, but I don't think we established special study habits or said you've got to do this or you've got to do that. I remember my daughter was asked to speak for the Phi Beta Kappa seniors when she was graduating, and she came and said, Mother, what in the world can I talk about? I'm tired of the question of democracy versus communism and these things that everybody is putting in their speeches. And I said, well, when you were in high school, you always got out Winnie the Pooh. Why don't you get Winnie the Pooh? And she got Winnie the Pooh and found the story of the A that Pooh found in the forest, and Christopher Robin told him that meant excellence. And so she talked about excellence according to Winnie the Pooh. But, you know, just little things like that. But I think we depended on them to do their job, and they did it.
So it was just accepted that
right.
they would
that
perform
they would.
It at
mm-hmm.
these high standards, and yeah. being a faculty brat didn't really matter.
No, I think my son suffered because my daughter happened to be one of those individuals who got her term papers in a month ahead of time, and he wasn't made that way. So he'd say, oh, what'll I do about her? She's always ahead. But he got it in just under the deadline.
What kind of thing was your husband writing?
Well, he wrote poetry from interest, and one book of poetry which he published is called Waters Over Men Creek, was the story of the flooding of the Osage River when the dam was built, Bagnell Dam was built across the river, and a lot of towns were inundated, and we were motoring across the state and came to the end of the road, and a little motorboat came along and said he had a ferry, he'd take us across, and we drove on it, and he pointed down and he said, 40 feet down under here is Lynn Creek Town. So that got my husband's interest, and he looked up the records and he wrote a book called Waters Over Lynn Creek. And it's all in poetry. It's a very interesting story, and it tells about progress, and that's what we have in the world today, and it tells what happens, what gets lost, and what gets saved. And that was kind of interesting to be part of. And the other great interest, I think, was in Rose O'Neill. And people now don't remember quite so much as they used to about Rose O'Neill's Cupid dolls. Rose made the first Cupid doll. And at one time when we were visiting in Kansas City, Ralph was giving a lecture, and a woman came up to him afterwards and said, I believe you're the man I can trust with the life of Rose O'Neill. Rose wrote this before she died, and it wasn't publishable, they said. So here it is, and if you can make anything of it, I'll give it to you. And so he wrote The Life of Rose O'Neill, which is called Titans and Cupids, because Rose O'Neill made enormous statues as well as tiny cupids. And that's the story of her life.
Did he use that manuscript, or did he write research and then write his own?
He used that manuscript in part, and then he wrote to all the people she mentioned and got their reactions, and the letters from those people are included. And some of them were old-time Ozark people, as his family was from the Ozarks, and her family was. And some of them were modern writers or dancers or artists she had mentioned, and he wrote to all of them. And we had very interesting letters coming in. And from all of that, he put together the story of her life. But a good deal of it is quoted from her original autobiography.
And what year was this that he was given this? Do you remember?
No, I don't exactly. It must have been in the 40s.
And did you...
It was soon after she died.
Mm-hmm. And did you do... did you help with this at all?
Well, just a little bit. I mean, reading over these letters and figuring out what parts were usable, and I was interested in the Cupid dolls, and you know, we always won those if we did anything at a county fair. So that was kind of interesting, but it was his book.
And you obviously enjoyed reading this correspondence.
Oh, yes.
Did
yes,
he share much. A lot of his correspondence with his students, with you?
With me, but not with his students, no.
I mean the correspondence from his students to him.
Yes.
Did the letters that he might get that he would think were particularly interesting, would he share
yes.
those with you?
Yes, yes.
Did he ever have situations where he might be having trouble communicating with a student, that he'd discuss this with you and you'd help him try to resolve the problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, his communication was better than mine. I don't think he very often had problems, but he did often tell me about things. And I suppose you'd say advising with him, but he had better ways of expressing himself than I ever had. I ran into somebody who had him as a teacher not too long ago over here, at a meeting of people who use the van for the handicapped and the elderly. And the man in charge of the meeting was in a wheelchair, and he was going around. I heard somebody call him Mike. So I stopped him, and I said, "Mike, are you the Mike that I would know about?" "I am Mrs. Ralph McCants," he said. "Oh, yes." Said, "If it hadn't been for your husband, I wouldn't be here today. He made me go on to school, as crippled and handicapped as I was. And he taught me by correspondence what I needed to pass different examinations. And here I am now, employed by the state government, working with the handicapped."
That must have been very rewarding
to
hear these things.
His name is Mike Faulkner.
Mike Faulkner.
And I understand that he is recently married, and he has a happy home.
That must be very, very rewarding.
Things like that are thrilling. They really are.
These were essentially the people that were being reached by extension.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who could not
attend classes.
Yeah, they simply couldn't go to school. Mm-hmm. Schools were not required to make their facilities available to them, so they couldn't go.
Mm-hmm. Many's the time I drove Ralph to Mike's house with books and things to help Mike read, because he wouldn't be able to get to the library to get these things, help him to prepare his lessons.
So you did help to that degree?
Oh, yes, I was part of it that way.
You were part of it that way, but not not part of writing the lessons that kind of thing.
He could do that better than I could.
But you were giving him essentially a lot of your support.
Oh, yes.
And he would discuss these kinds of things with you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that you weren't really isolated from his work.
No.
But you weren't doing the professional part of it either.
That's right. I wouldn't have been capable of doing that.
Who was keeping house during all this period while you were doing all those things?
I did it. I had a weekly cleaning help, but I did the rest.
Did you have any other hobbies other than your volunteer work?
No, I guess not. I
no handiwork.
And knitted
you,
and things like that.
You crocheted and
yes.
knitted, but mm-hmm. but you didn't indulge in any painting or poetry writing of your own. Did you do
no.
any poetry of your own?
No, never. And I couldn't. I had been an art minor and a music minor in my college days. I couldn't carry on those things. Because along in my career, I had polio. And the last year I was in college, I found after the polio that my hands wouldn't play very well anymore, and they wouldn't paint very well anymore. They still could crochet, but I gave up the other hobbies.
So you essentially, do you think that your husband's work with the handicap perhaps touched a chord with you?
I think so.
Because
think
you,
so.
You really felt some sort of loss there yourself.
Yes. Uh-huh. The loss was so minor compared with all of the fact that I got as well as I did that I didn't think about it often. But when anybody had a handicap, I think it appealed to me particularly.
I think that we will end this here,
good.
And if I think of other things I'd like to know, I would like to feel free to call you
okay.
and clear up anything,
okay.
or if
Do
I
that.
Think of additional things, would
Do that
be all right?
Oh, sure, I haven't much on my mind.